Yes, and I'll try to be a little bit faster than before. The point here is now that if we have an RNN that can understand a sequence well enough to reliably predict it, we can use it to find out when the sequence is behaving weirdly. That is, if we can learn what's normal, then we can detect abnormal behavior. And that was why we wanted to do this in the first place. So if we can discover abnormal behavior just a little bit earlier than once it really manifests itself, so if we can discover it in advance, just a little bit even, that can be extremely advantageous, can save lives and millions and millions of resources. For example, you can consider detecting failure in a nuclear reactor early, or an engine breakdown, or extreme weather events, etc. If you know
pandemics.
What's that?
Pandemics.
Pandemics. Okay, that might be. That would be very, very useful. So it applies in almost every field. You can also think of financial fraud, for example, transactions that are out of the ordinary. What we wanted to use it for was to discover weird phenomena in climate simulation data. The difficulty there is that we are producing terabytes and terabytes and terabytes of simulation data, and it's so enormous that there's just no way for any human to have an overview of it. Like Markus Jokum, who we collaborated on this, says, the simulated oceans are essentially as unexplored as the real oceans. So we have this enormous amount of simulation data, and we'd like to figure out where is something interesting happening, where should real physicists look. So it's not that we want the machine to do the physics. We want the machine to say, you, Mr. Physicist or Mrs. Physicist, go look here, something interesting is happening. So we'll need some form of recurrent neural network because these are sequences, but the size of the data makes it impossible to use networks like LSTM, at least in the form that they're usually used, because it's too heavy to train, it's too unreliable, because we need to be able to do it we need to do it reliably enough that we don't need to tweak around the buttons too much once it's running. But for equistate networks, the problem is that they actually only work well for one-dimensional sequences. And this is very high dimensional. You have thousands and thousands and thousands of points, each with their own value that is developing in time. So the problem with standard ESN is that, if you recall, you start out with a map to hidden space, and then something complicated happens in the hidden space, and then you have a map that you learn from the hidden space to the output. And the way that people have used ESNs before is to have a uniformly random map from the input to the hidden output, and that just throws away all the important information. If you consider the simulation of the ocean, you see that it's not, each point is not independent of the other. There's some spatial and temporal correlation going on, and it's guided by some differential equations that where interaction is first between neighbors and then things that are further away. So we wanted to make a equistate network that works, that can actually predict for simulations. And in this case, finite difference simulations, which is when you work with a regular grid. So you divide space up into equally sized little squares or cubes, And then you make discretizations of the differential operators to do differential equations on them. And because they are in this regular grid, they look similar to images. Also because solutions are generally smooth, you may have discontinuities, but they're usually far and few and localized. And the spatial and temporal correlation means that it's like usually the solution is something like a smooth function in space and time. So we want to exploit this structure. And what we do is to take the random map, and then instead of just mapping randomly from the input to the hidden space, we want the map to be meaningful. We want it to keep features that are important so that they can have meaning in the and correlations that are important so that they can have meaning in the recurrence relations in the hidden space. So the what we did was to say, all right, we want to map to a high-dimensional space where things can happen. And we want them to, we want the map from the input to the high-dimensional space to have meaning. So we stack a bunch of maps that each individually have meaning. And then the recurrence relations inside the sparse W matrix takes care of mixing all these things together that we can then learn an output function to. So an example can be a downscaled version of the image, various random convolutions. What turned out to be very important was to include frequency transformations, so a cosine transform that gets long-range behavior, so long-range correlations through frequencies, gradients, and then you can have a bit of randomness as well. And we also want to add stuff like divergence, curl, turbulence, vorticity, etc. that all have meaning. And that can then be tailored to whatever field you're using it on. Of course, that goes a little bit against the general idea of that is common in machine learning, that you don't want to know anything. But actually, it helps quite a lot to know something and to let the machine be fed that as well. Just to illustrate here, this is our spatial ESN working on a blob, that a video of a blob that moves around in a predictable pattern. So here it is moving around in what's called a Lissajous pattern, which is a periodic pattern of sines and cosines. And you see that we compare it with our LSTM training, which works well in the beginning and then it falls apart. And that's quite common of what we found when working with the LSTMs, that it's able to predict some part into the future and then it gets stuck, probably because the optimization gets into a local minimum or a bifurcation or something like that. In this case, we also did an analytical analysis where using a Fourier transform, we computed the best cyclic exact cycle, and in this case, because it's exactly cyclic, it works perfectly. But we notice here that our ESN solution gets almost down to machine precision, just like the cycle, which is exact. Now, if we now do it with a chaotic, something that's almost cyclic but not quite, the analytic solution breaks apart, and the LSTM also does sort of all right, and then it breaks down. But including the spatial information actually managed to get this to be about as good as it was in the 1D case for the Mackey class. Only of course it is it needs a much higher dimensional hidden space. Notice that this is in the log scale. So, but it it goes well for quite a while. And then, of course, as you let it run and run and run, it ends up deteriorating, and none of the solutions can predict infinitely fine to the future. But this here, it's able to predict 200 steps into the future almost perfectly, which is quite impressive, I think. But what we really wanted to use it on was oceanographic data. And as a first step, thesis with Niklas Heim, we looked at discovering automatically an ocean phenomena called the Kuroshio. It's Japanese for the black tide. And it's one of the strongest ocean boundary currents in the world. And at some random intervals, seemingly random intervals, it quickly switches. So it flows in one way for a number of years, and then suddenly it swaps. And it has a lot of importance to the fishermen and to weather, etc. And being able to predict it would be very useful in itself. So we ended up, so here is the most important part of it. This is Japan sitting here. And you can see the LSTM is doing some, it's not too bad, but we're actually able to get most of the features predicted 1 year into the future. And then in order to get anomalies, what we want is to, is then to continuously predict a year into the future, and then we measure the accumulated error for the whole year prediction. So here we see it, see a prediction, each line is a prediction of 100 steps into the future, and the area under the curve is the total error for that prediction. And if that suddenly deviates very much from normal, then we have found an anomaly. By making a heat map of where you get many anomalous events, we can localize in space where there might be an anomaly. And in this case, we know already. So what we had was trained on 10 years of ocean data, and then predicted every day for 5 years. So predicted a year ahead every day for 5 years. And if you suddenly have a big increase in the prediction error, that is, we are very wrong for some reason, then we know that somewhere in that prediction, something weird happened. And we sort of see a increase of error and then falling again as we get away from the anomalous prediction. And once we have localized it in space, we can localize it in time. Here we're looking at this bit here. And we can see that the error of the prediction compared to the truth is low, 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 and then suddenly something happens. Yeah, and that is in fact exactly where the Kuroshio swaps or swapped in real life. So we were able to predict it without, I mean, just fully automatically. Of course, we don't just want to be able to predict things that we know. We want to be predict things that we don't know. We want to now, with this success, scale it up to look into the oceans and find new undiscovered phenomena. So that requires some more work. So we did the extension from 1D to simulation data, but then to go to a full world climate simulation is has some large technical challenges. So we're going to, when we get some talented master students to work on it, together with Markus Jochum from the Team Ocean look at some hotspots where there might where they're suspected of interesting phenomena going on, and there are a number of different things that one could work on for a master's project for this. Both the technical part of being able to scale. So we were able to look at a smallish region of the ocean and only using surface height. But the climate simulations have a lot of different parameters, a lot of different fields that develop and might give more information, like salinity or temperature at depth, etc. And then we want to be able to treat much larger regions. So there are a lot of interesting things to work on there. That was all I had. I'm sorry for going over time. And I hope you found it interesting, and I'll be happy to answer questions if there are some.
Please. And otherwise, I have a few things to say, much mm-hmm. more administrational. And I can see the chat is bigger, so that's good. You can read that meanwhile. I'm going to say three things. First, I'm going to say that example solutions for week two have been put on the week two webpage using PCA and clustering. And well, if you think that you have a reasonably good solution here in week three, then we'll be happy to post them. So keep that in mind also for the exercise now. And eventually we'll also post an echo state solution to the to this problem. So that's one thing. Secondly, I would say that next week is a bit special in that we're potentially also going to involve some of you in Thursday morning from 9 to 12. We're having a Thursday and Friday we're having a workshop here in Copenhagen on using machine learning in science. And Thursday morning, we have four lecturers from around the world give quite frontline and interesting examples of usage of machine learning in science. So I urge you highly to join us Thursday morning on the 14th, and I'll also post that in the week four, of course. I need to talk to you regarding that also, James. I'll get back to you. Mm-hmm. And finally, final project groups. Now we're getting to the point where you should have considered that. And at the end of the day, after the end of the day, if you have not written me, then I'll start writing you, because you need to be in a group. And think about that. And on the final project webpage, you can see the groups that have already formed. And if you are two persons, for example, or three or something like that, and you want others to join, well, tell me and I'll post subgroups there so that you can join. And then I'll post sort of all other students in the class on the singles list, and we'll start mixing and matching. Finally, I can say that on the small project webpage, we posted a good reader for the data, just so that you can pick it up there now. And it's both in Python and IPy notebook. Cool.
Shall I do the questions?
Yeah, please comment on the discussion. I'm going to read.
So I'll start with Andy and bunch the El Nino questions together. So Andy asks, is it possible to say anything about how long time these methods can predict into the future compared to how long time of training data we have? And the answer is, I don't have a strict mathematical answer to it, only experience. And as you saw with the ocean simulation, so that's a quite complicated behavior. And that was 10 years of training data. And then after that, the predictions were good about a year into the future. Now, of course, the thing about the year is that it is highly dominated by the yearly cycle. But still, the predictions from the EchoState networks were much better than what you got from just using the yearly cycle.
If I may add, also just a statistical way of finding out is to say, now I'm going to train up till, say, 2015 and then apply it to 16. And then 2015 and half of 16 and apply it a year and a half and simply statistically get an idea of how well does it work. I think it's situation specific.
That's a good idea. Yeah. And with the Mackie Glass, the simple 1D stuff, we could get to about 300 steps ahead from 2,000 steps. I think exactly do as Truls suggests, do some actual measurements before you trust it. And then the other one was El Niño, and I think that that is a very important thing that one could try to apply it to, and I think it would be a super interesting master's thesis that I know that Marcus Jokum would also be happy to do, maybe in collaboration with you, Truls. There are, as Marta says, other machine learning attempts and some with quite some success. But I think it is certainly not a solved problem yet. So I can also send some papers on that. Maybe the similar ones to the ones Marta has. And I think that was it for the questions.
Yeah, well, we're going to keep the channel open and please consider the exercise. And once you've looked at the exercise, you're also welcome to simply say, all right, I'm going to work more on the small project. And if nothing else, then we reconvene 1:15, where it's Adriano who will be leading the session. And before we all start looking at code and so on, I just think we should thank you, James, very much for coming here. So unmute all of you who can and clap, please, as we do. Cool. Well, we'll be online. And you're also welcome to just post questions. We'll sit and look at those, of course.
Yeah. And Truls, we'll talk more about the exercise solutions and stuff like that.
Yeah, and workshop and so on. Cool. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Wonderful. Have a great day.
Yeah.
Want to say something, Sufus?
All right. We're nearing the end of this first Wednesday session. So I think you should just, calmly have some lunch and relax. And then we'll reconvene in an hour and 15 minutes, 1:15, where Adriano will be talking about mixed models. Yep, over and out. Cheers.